Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to executives and founders and we get their insights as to how they scale up their businesses and also scale up themselves and in so doing head towards their desired scene. And super stoked today to have George on the show. George is the CEO of H2 Crypto. And alongside that, George has also, you know, had a stellar career in the financial services space, working in senior positions as the likes of BlackRock and also Wells Fargo. So super stoked, George, to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Awesome to be here. Thank you very much for the invite. Can't wait to get into it with you.
Brilliant. And before the show, George and I caught up and we're having a chat and we're chatting about whether it's important to have, whether it's a necessity to have corporate experience if you are going out and starting your own business. And we thought, actually, let's have a chat about this. Let's talk about this on a podcast and get our learnings out there. Because you know what? Starting a business is not at all like working in large corporates. You know, in large corporates, you have habits and you have perks, and these things are difficult to actually overcome once you enter into building up and starting and founding a business. And I've been in positions where I used to work at Accenture and you heard it all the time. People wanting to go out and leave that corporate environment and head into their dreams and create a business. And in all honesty, I was one of them. I was like, I need to do this. And I now wonder why I needed to do that, because I've sort of been there and done that. I never really, and they never really realized how tough it is, right? How tough it is to break out of the big corporate habits and conventions, and also how tough it is out there on your own, right? Because understanding PR, understanding marketing, understanding all these little things that make you as a founder visible aren't what you are taught in a big corporate, right? And I think although it's difficult, yes, you do have a choice. Everyone has a choice in their life, but they need to have the data there to make a realistic choice for the way they want to live their life. And now I want to get into the nitty-gritty of this today. And who better to discuss it with than George, right? Let's start the podcast off by maybe looking inside the corporate world and figuring out if these corporates are places where you can get experience, you can get a load of exposure to different things. Why do you think it's not that easy to jump out of a corporate and jump into a startup as a founder?
Richard, would you believe, so it's interesting you telling me about your experience at Accenture and your colleagues and yourselves always having this dream about breaking away and being your own boss and being your own entrepreneur. And I would tell you that in my close to three decades working in and around Wall Street, that was absolutely the norm as opposed to the being the outlier. And everybody I almost came across was relatively unhappy with their roles. And so the question is, well, why are people still doing it then? And I believe people love to use crutches constantly. I make too much money to quit. I need the benefits. My partner needs whatever for me to work here for whatever reason. Yep. And we're constantly finding reasons to prevent ourselves from truly breaking away. The other issue might be they're unhappy. They want to be their own boss, but they're not really sure what they want to do. And with me, I think I was similarly positioned, and then something hit me from a user experience, and that kind of changed my trajectory, if you will. Now, I want to impose some good old-fashioned American rock and roll on you all, and I tell this to my kids, and I tell this to my business colleagues, and this is so salient to everyone listening.
You're not going to bring out the Bruce Springsteen stuff, are you?
I am not. I'm going with the Eagles. I'm going with the Eagles on this
one,
actually. But everybody likes to use crutches on why we can't do this and why we can't do that. And I don't want to lead the company for this reason. And there's a great song by the Eagles called Already Gone. And in that song, they have a lyric that goes like this. So oftentimes it happens that we live our lives in chains and we never even know we have the key. And that's it, folks. Game over. Okay. So every time we try and present ourselves with hurdles and excuses and reasons why not to do it, the answer lies right there. We have the key. We can take these chains off, whether they're corporate boundaries, whether they're whatever thing that's preventing you back or holding you. The answer is in your hand with that key. And that's very important for people to remember.
I love that because you do have a choice, right? You always have a choice. You yourself are the master of your own destiny, the master of the path, the master of the journey that you're going down. But for some, making that choice, they also, we as humans, everyone, I think, likes to at least have some sort of certainty as to whether to go down path A or path B. And if it's path A, maybe there's going to be a few obstacles. What do I need to encounter? How do I get over those hurdles? So in a corporate and you're thinking of jumping over the fence and starting up, let's say, a consulting business or a new tech business. It doesn't have to be, or something else. It might be something totally different. How do you get the know-how? How do you get the know-how that the venture that you are going down or the path that you want to go down can yield, or is going to be difficult, but can yield the life experience and the enjoyment that you want from a career?
So look, I think that the road to entrepreneurialism has little to do with the intelligence quotient, the IQ. However, I have formulated something called the DAPQ, D-A-P-Q. Okay, what does that stand for? Determination, ambition, and passion quotient. And in my world, I would argue that those three characteristics greatly surpass the intelligence because everybody in the corporate world is smart enough as is. That has very little to do with it. But do you have that determination to see your project through? Are you ambitious enough to see it through? And most importantly, do you have that burning desire? Because if you have the DAPQ, that means you will find the will to the way. Yes, I worked in and around Wall Street for close to 3 decades. But when I started going down the road of building a cryptocurrency exchange, I didn't know the first thing about that. But I had the determination, ambition, and passion. And there's so many resources that are available out there. I scoured things like LinkedIn, believe it or not. And this is another thing that people put these hurdles up. They think, oh, if I try and meet so-and-so via LinkedIn or a connection, they're not going to accept it. I was amazed at how receptive people were in embracing me on LinkedIn. And then you go to the internet and start researching and meeting and YouTubes and just, you know, whatever your subject is that you're trying to get into, I can guarantee you there is an absolute ample amount of research that you can find on the internet. And by conducting your research, you can get to a pretty good point of knowing what you're trying to pull off, if at least it's got a value prop, if you will, if other people will have interest in it. And then you start figuring out how to formulate your team and putting things together. And again, going back to this crutch, you know, people say, I don't have the contacts, I don't have the money. If you have that burning desire, you will find all of these things.
I love what you're saying there, and it spikes up a good memory for me, actually. A number of years ago, maybe not a lot of people know this actually, but I set up a consumer products business. First consumer products business, actually the second consumer products business I did. The first one was in the 90s in South Africa, where we were importing satellites and mobile telephones into Africa once the doors of democracy opened after Mandela's release. And this one was through a contact. One of my friends said, listen, we've got a buyer out in China and he would like some consumer products from Europe. Can you help? So was like, okay, well, that's interesting. Let me see. I wanted to take a look and check out whether I could source these products. What products were they? They were luxury products such as luxury orange juice, luxury wine, luxury beer, those type of things. So nothing that I had really particularly been working in, but I liked the fact that it was physical. I like physical things. I like to go out and take a look at it. And okay, if it's physical, I can test it. I can see it. I can send it out. And I scoured the whole of Europe. I went on a roadshow and I drove through most probably every single country in Europe to go and find the suppliers for my Chinese buyer. And lo and behold, I did. I found a few good suppliers and we created a business. And then I went out to Rotterdam and I found a really good logistics partner. And all of a sudden, in the space of 18 months from scratch, I was sending out quite a few containers out from Rotterdam to Ningbo port and supplying the Chinese with Western products, which is what they wanted. And I like what you're saying there, because if you have the determination and the passion and the drive, nothing can stop you. In this instance, I mean, I had, you know, Scooby-Doo knowledge about, you know, consumer products. And I did not know anyone that was supplying these type of products. But I wanted to find them. And I did find them. And I got on my bike and I put in the effort. And I think if people want it, don't, you know, put excuses in front of yourself. Just go out and, you know, in all honesty, fucking do it, right?
100%. Look, in today's world, with the resources available at everyone's fingertips via their mobile phone or desktop, whatever, the excuse barrier is off the table.
Exactly.
And it gets back what you were just saying to the human element. I mean, there's been too many people that have started things. And I used to use this crutch too, by the way. You know, this is my third chomp at the entrepreneurial apple. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I can't do this. What do I know about that? And, you know, I'm not going to be successful because I don't have a background in history in it. That's just not the case. There's too many success stories that people started industries and got into businesses that they didn't have a background in and became wildly successful. So your story is a great point of illustration.
But it's also, and I remember back in the days in Accenture, and it is difficult sometimes to break free because you're surrounded by, in the corporate world anyway, by processes, structures, hierarchical leadership that puts you into a box. And, you know, in that box, you have to do X, Y, Z to get X, Y, Z. And I have sympathy for folk out there that haven't or have tried and have failed to break free and jump out of that corporate box. I mean, what you said you had three or four goes at it. What have you tried initially that didn't work? And then what did you learn from those experiences that on your second or third time made it easier to obviously get towards a winning formula?
Yeah. I think the two endeavors prior, one was in financial services, one wasn't whatsoever. And the second one was a little bit of kind of extenuating circumstances. It was kind of a franchise model. And it's a very, very long story that kind of went sideways with the franchisor.
Yeah.
But the first one really came down, I think, to stick-to-itiveness. And we had something that was very creative, very unique at the time, coming out of the financial meltdown. This was in 2010 or 11, so a couple of years passed, and I had a partner. And I think that if you're going to be an entrepreneur, the road to success is not easy. That's just the bottom line. It's filled with potholes. It's filled with stop signs, U-turns. But if you have tenacity, you can overcome anything. And I think more often than not, success is, you know, this very razor thin edge, if you will. And people get so close and right up to it, and then they just don't see the light and they quit. And it's a shame because they are right there. And that's one of the things. I had another partner with this entity. And after going at it for about a year, again, it really got to the fundraising component. And we were halfway through to launch this business. And after about a year, they didn't see really the light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. I would argue that had we sauntered on just probably a couple more months, we would have gotten it. Yeah. And the reality is about failure, you know, people, look, we're human. Yeah. Oftentimes we get extraordinarily insecure about our failures, but get over it. Everyone fails. I mean, I don't care what entrepreneur, right? What multi-gazillionaire you come across, he or she has failed in their lives. And instead of rolling over and crying about it, feel bad about themselves, you know, yeah, they might do that for a day or two. We're human. I get it. They dust themselves up. They pick themselves up And more importantly, they say, okay, why did I fail? Now let's go back and do some recalibrations. Let's tweak our settings and have another run at it. And that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm looking at my old playbook, even though it's slightly different, but the model of how I got to where I was going, and I'm using that same playbook here with H2 Crypto.
I like it. And it also makes me think, I mean, as a business owner, a founder, CEO, you have a different view on business, right? You have a different lens to look through when you look at your business, how you can move forward, how you can optimize, etc. Whereas on the other hand, in the corporate world, I feel that lens is sometimes a bit murky when it comes to moving forward. Rightly or wrongly, maybe I'm being a bit harsh, maybe it's my experience. It's more of a political lens that you have to figure out how to maneuver around, rather than in, you know, the entrepreneurial or founder world, how do you get your customers on board, i.e. how do you create winning customers? How do you create a winning platform? How do you create a winning service? Yeah, I'd like to get your point of view. I mean, how do you look through business? What's the lens you look through business at? And how does it differ from that of a corporate lens?
So I think in the corporate world that, unfortunately, you are subject to the luck of the draw with regards to your bosses and superiors. Yeah. I think that it's unfortunate that most of bosses and superiors, when someone under them has a great concept or great idea, as opposed to funneling it up, they either shoot it down or they try and hijack it and take it themselves. And that's very, very dicey. And I've seen that throughout my career. And it's just a shame because I'm the exact opposite. I want to actually hire and build a team of people that are 10 times smarter and better than me. It doesn't help the other way around.
And that causes, and that type of thing causes stress, anxiety, and just causes, you know, bad team morale. Yeah, I've seen it countless times, just like you mentioned. And it's not great. Whereas on the other side of the coin, you mentioned, you want everyone to come up with their ideas. And actually, when they come up with ideas, they do a bit more, right? They actually go off and execute.
And most importantly, and again, this is endemic in the corporate culture, that you feel like you have to agree with your superiors and bosses, right? So you create this group think because he or she is setting the tone from the top down. And most people are afraid to, you know, raise their hand and speak up and stand out because they're worried about losing their positions. Yeah. And if you think about it, that's the worst thing any companies could do. Yeah. You need to have people with a variance of opinions. And so I tell my team constantly, guys, it doesn't help for you to corroborate what I'm saying. I need you to poke holes in my thesis and tell me where I'm not being smart so we can get better. You know, it just doesn't make sense if we're all saying, yeah, way to go, George. That doesn't help at all. Yeah. And I think with regards to, you know, my current company, the question really begins is there a pain point in what you're trying to overcome? And if you realize there's a pain point, then you start to look at, you know, what is the size and scale of those pain points? And then do you have the solution to cure it? We feel we do. So that's kind of the way we, at least at a broad scope, start looking at the canvas of how we're going to paint it, if you will.
Yeah, I like it. I like what you're saying there, especially about your current team and getting them the empowering them to be on a level path as you, your team, right? Why do we have to, you know, congratulate and boost each other's egos? We're here to actually solve the problem. And I recall a few weeks ago, I was launching a book, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And, you know, I was in discussion with my team and we were chatting about the name, the design and everything. And I had an opinion, because you have to have an opinion. And my head of marketing had an opinion, and we clashed. And it was great to clash. I was like, man, bring it on. And they're like, Richard, you're off the mark here. We shouldn't name it XYZ. We should name it Unlock Hidden Profit Zone. Totally correct. And this is why. And I was like, actually, you're right. This is brilliant. And I said to Jim, you're a master. Yeah, awesome that you have done that. He said, I hope I didn't offend you. I said, yeah, never, ever, ever. And it's amazing what happens after you do that as well. Because there's this energy in the team that carries you forward to the next milestone. So I really love what you're saying there, right?
It's so funny because not only do we try to instill these disciplines in our executive team, but our team members, We tell them the same thing. I mean, how often do you get team members to tell the C-suite, tells them, hey, we want your opinion. We want your feedback. You are facing our clients. We aren't. You are much more valuable than us. And it's amazingly, like you said, empowering to them to feel like they have a say. And it's important because that's how we learn. You know, it doesn't help if I think something, but they're on the front line and they're learning it. And if it doesn't get filtered up to me, that doesn't help my business. Doesn't make us better.
100%, 100%. And as part of this, I guess, this progress from corporate world to founder world or startup world, what are some of the attributes that you have actually taken from the corporate world that have helped you as a startup founder, helped you get over certain hurdles as you've grown your business and started your business?
You know, if I could think of two key things that I learned from the corporate world that I've used here, which has served me extraordinarily well, is structure and discipline. And I think that being in a, you know, when I grew up in the first part of my career, is markets driven. And we were typically at our desks at around, you know, 6:30 to 7 a.m. in the morning. And we were there till 5 or 6. And you start to get this discipline and regimen, and you know, wash, rinse, repeat. And you do it like that so it sticks and it holds and you become successful at it. Well, when the pandemic hit, even though I hadn't started this company yet, and we were moved out of the offices and I was working from my home office as I do now, that structure and discipline saved me, because we all know people that weren't accustomed to working from home or didn't have structure or discipline, you know, maybe they would wake up 2 hours late, maybe they work in their pajamas, maybe they would not take it seriously and be in front of the television on their couch, you know, doing their work. But I think having structure and discipline from my financial services career has been very helpful throughout this endeavor and really key.
And when you say, let's dive into that a bit. When you say structure and discipline, what exactly are we talking about? Is it more having a battle plan every day, having a plan for every week, making certain that there is certain operational procedures in place that allows the team to move forward? I mean, other examples I can come up with, but is that what we're talking about here?
That's it. I mean, you know, it's all about routine. Now, there's also a thin line between rigidity and having some flexibility. So I'll give you an example. You know, we have daily calls with the C-suite 2 times a day. And oftentimes we do have to be flexible. I mean, I want to get updates exactly twice a day in the morning and the afternoon, know exactly what's going on. But yet business is fluid. And sometimes these calls have to be pushed aside and we move it up or move it back. But I think on a daily basis, it's almost, it's akin to pilots. Right. Before they hit that engine, they do a walk around, a check through, and make sure everything on that list is fixed. And I think businesses, it's imperative, especially when you're starting up, to have your daily walkthroughs and check-throughs of every single point and making sure things don't fall through the cracks. Again, we're human. Sometimes these things do happen, especially when you're first starting out and you're drinking from the proverbial fire hose, if you will, and you're trying to figure out where to go first. But if you go back to your checklist, that will keep you kind of honest, if you will, and where you are in your processes.
Yeah, I like it. And then that's it. That's vital, right? Having that checklist in front of you and having those routines, as you said, even if they're daily routines, they can be shifted out, but as long as they happen. Because if, I don't know if you like this, but if I have a daily routine, just as you do, and if certain things don't happen during the day that should happen during the day, I feel out of whack. I feel like the day's incomplete. And I sort of, in a way, I can't go to bed. I need to finish it off. So I make certain that my calendar looks like there are chunks of different things and activities going on. And at the back end of the day, I've got a little, what I call a bucket list, which gives me an hour at the back end of the day just to do things that for whatever reason have slipped off. Maybe a podcast has lasted half an hour than it should have done, or maybe I was on a call with a client for half an hour more than I should have been. And I wasn't able to do X, Y, Z, but it gives me that way out that allows me to then actually finish my day on a good footing and then go into the next day.
Yeah. And look, the other thing about a routine is, and I don't mean it the way it's going to sound is, but you kind of eliminate the thinking component, right? Meaning that it's just rote memory. You've been there, done that. And again, I think that kind of, you know, gels into your brain, and it's just one of these things that, you know, and having that structure, discipline, routine to me is absolutely vital and critical.
And on the flip side, I mean, as you jumped into, you know, leading your own business, What are the maybe top one or two skills that you've had to acquire in the short term to really help you progress and move forward?
I would say, with my background, I am not a patient man whatsoever and never have been. And I think most people that work in financial services are very type A and, you know, need things to happen immediately. I would say, being an entrepreneur, you have to have a healthy dose of patience. Now, that's a very slippery slope, right? Because patience can lead to potentially procrastination and setting things off and just, you know, well, I'll just wait till somebody gets back to me. There's a thin line between being persistent and impetuous. So I have developed some patience. I try and relegate myself not to be too much of a pain when people haven't responded in the time frame I think they should. And then the other thing is tenacity. I think, again, it all boils down, you know, if I could mix metaphors, this is not rocket science or rocket surgery, I should say. This is a matter of tenacity. And again, most people, when they face this adversity hurdle, they might kind of slow down or stop or quit, and you just can't. If you're going to be a successful entrepreneur, no matter what is being thrown at you, what you're going to be constantly being set off afoot, you're going to have to be agile. You know, people ask me, say, how's your life? What's going on? What's happening? I say, you know, I barbell my emotions between sheer euphoria one day and sheer horror and panic the next day. And I think that truly encompasses, I'm not trying to scare people, but I do want people to understand. So when they get to these points, they say, hey, that guy, George, he said, you're going to have days where you're higher than the highest mountain in the world and days where you're, you know, as low as can be. And that's the same in business and life. It's not just starting up a business. That's how life is.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the more, again, like the more data, you know, folk out there have, and the more they understand exactly what is coming their way, the better decisions they can make, right? And I also think, as a corporate employee, one has to take control. Even if they're in the corporate role, but they have to take control of their identity, right? Because if they take control of their identity, even if they big corporate, they can start building out a network that at a point in time can, you know, they can call on, right? And I always say to my clients, having a brand, having a personal brand is the first step forward, right? You need to have a personal brand that people identify with, and also that you can use to, at a point in time, to maybe go on another journey, right? And what I'd like to know from you is, how has your corporate brand helped in building your business, if at all?
I think it has helped. I wouldn't say that that was the catalyst to what got me here today. And that's important for the listeners to hear that, again, working for some big Fortune 500 or some household brand name company, that's the only key to it. I will say, because of the leverageability of the connections that you make throughout your career and also life, I think that, you know, it's funny, I went back to business school rather late in life. And I remember we actually had a general come speak to the class, and he talked about the power of what you're talking about, your own personal brand, your corporate brand. And you need to have at least kind of, he talked about 100, which to me is a massive amount of people, but 100 people in your relatively immediate orbit or circle, because the power of those 100 people can spread out pretty much across the globe. And I do believe that's important. But I think that going back to your personal brand, likability, trust, those are vital components. And looking at the people that you've come across in your life can absolutely help you. Because again, when you're having these issues of where do I start? Where do I begin? If you start going through, I'm old school, your Rolodex today, if you start going through your LinkedIn and look, again, what a valuable tool where whatever subject matter you're talking about, you can just plug it into the search bar and it will tell you immediately what connections you have or what degree of separation to those connections. So I think all these tools are vital in helping people build their own brand, if you will. And again, I cannot stress enough, it has blown me away, the receptivity to people when you're starting out your own business, your own journey, your own venture, people actually are willing to help.
Yeah.
And they will go to great ends to help you.
Yeah, 100%, 100% agree with that. And also, starting out with your personal brand, if you are in a if you're in the corporate world, is not a bad place to start your entrepreneurial journey. Because if you have a cool, I don't know, Twitter page or LinkedIn page or even Facebook page, i.e., something that is maybe relevant to your public, you know, people are going to start wanting to talk to you, and then you know, potentially opportunities come out, right?
Now, that's really interesting what you're saying, because, you know, when we first started this endeavor back in January of 2021, there was crickets, nothing was happening. Today, I can tell you, I don't know, do I get 10 or 20 different, you know, LinkedIn invites? Because like you said, kind of, and I hate to say success, but notoriety, whatever, begets notoriety and success. And so people then will really want to come and try and help you or be service partners or what have you. And it's a very rapid snowballing effect. It's not something you have to sit there for very long, because again, the power of the internet and social media, things get out rather quickly.
Yeah, it is insane. I mean, I've doubled down on all the internet stuff, and there are just so many things that everyone can get involved in. There's LinkedIn, there's Twitter, there's all the social platforms in the States. You have, you know, so many great entrepreneurs, Russell Brunson, one, and ClickFunnels. There's just so many things that you can do as a in a corporate and also as a startup founder to really get noticed, right? And also build really great partnerships or even friends. So, you know, why not? Why not build a community? It's not a bad thing, right? It's not a bad thing to go and serve as a community, even if it is, you know, I don't know, whatever that community could be. And you start up somewhere, but I guess the point is starting, trying to find the easiest hurdle to jump over first, rather than looking down, you know, the barrel of a marathon and thinking, oh my God, I'm never going to reach the end. Start small, right? Start on LinkedIn or start on ClickFunnels or start on a website. Doesn't matter, just start.
That's it. Look, I think being an entrepreneur is an absolutely evolutionary process, to your point. We kind of crawl before we walk before we run before we sprint, so forth and so on. And I do see a lot of entrepreneurs that try and take on way too much out of the gate, where they try and offer way too many, you know, widgets and products out of the gate. I think it's all about really kind of, if I can use the KISS technique, keep it simple, stupid, have something very focused. And then from that, your company is going to grow and mature. And then you can roll out different types of products and offerings and things of that nature. Great. But it's very important, again, to have that discipline to know exactly what you're offering out of the gate.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
When I was, you know, I go back to my Accenture days. They were glorious days, by the way, everyone out there. We had good fun. We had good fun traveling around and helping clients out. There was, being a consultant, we always talked about communication. And I got it. So you had to communicate to your clients. You had to communicate internally. You had to communicate to your immediate team. But jumping out of the box of that world, I realized is a totally different level of communication when it comes to being a startup founder, a person founding and owning a business. You have to be able to not only lead your team, but actually lead a following. You have to lead a community, and you have to get the community to realize exactly what it is you're trying to solve. And if you can't do that, you know, your life's a bit going to be a bit difficult. So how important do you think communication is to your role as a founder?
Vital, absolutely. Pivotal and critical, right? Nobody can read minds. And unless you are articulating to your team members what the narrative is and should be, they have no idea. And so what could happen at that point in time, which very much becomes a dangerous proposition, is each one of them is off kind of on their own island doing their own thing because they're not getting guidance from the C-suite or from their bosses. And having up-to-date and current communication is pivotal, just so everyone is on the same page. Again, it's akin to, you can get all the same rowers in the same boat, but if they're not rowing at the same time in the proper direction, you're not going to go very far. And it's vital to make sure you're choreographing the message so these rowers can get in sync, push the boat exactly where you're trying to push it in what direction.
And what about the market? I mean, you're also, you're going out and you're speaking to the public. I mean, people need to know about you guys. What are the ingredients to creating demand for your product such that, you know, people actually want to come to you, people want to engage with your product, and people actually, your public is then recommending your product onto others?
I think it all begins with what you're offering, right? The consumer, does the client, whether it's a business or a consumer, do they see the value proposition? Are you truly providing a solution?
Yeah.
Our model with our exchange is really 100% out of the gate predicated on the client service. We understand how difficult crypto can be. And without having someone there to help you, people aren't doing it. And that's what the numbers all indicate.
Yeah.
And I think that when you're providing a service where you know there is a massive hole or pain point, then people will find you. Now, that being said, they don't just pick you up by osmosis. You do have to go out there. You do have to be on the circuit and do marketing and things of that nature. But the reality is, again, with the world being so flat today, as Mr. Thomas Friedman wrote in his book, people can find you very, very quickly because of the internet's level playing field. And that is what we're doing right now. We are trying to get out to the world because we are a global company, even though we're based in the US, saying, if you've been reticent, if you've been afraid, you've been scared to invest in crypto because you don't know what you're doing and no one there to help you, we're here for you. And so these types of things, when companies have solutions that people are looking for, whether it's small groups or large groups or global populace, people find you. Again, today it's much easier than, 2022, there's really very little excuses because there is such a global reach now.
And, you know, that communication out to your public, what channels are you using? Are you on all the social channels? How exactly are you reaching your audience?
So we're rolling that out actually right now. We do have a LinkedIn page. We have a Twitter page. We have a Facebook page. Coming soon, we should be up on Instagram as well as Reddit. So all the usual channels. And then you'll start seeing things down the road that are paid in some crypto articles, Google, things of that nature. And, it's interesting because today there aren't really that many secrets when it comes to this kind of stuff in marketing. Yeah. Everybody knows what it is, how to do it. And they typically try and do the same thing.
Yeah, I agree. But it's also, so going out to platforms, getting the awareness and bringing people in, but it is crypto, right? And people, myself included, need education in it, right?
Yeah.
So we'll go out, we'll take a look at the YouTubes, the Reddits, the LinkedIn. And I'm going to say this to you, in all honesty, it's for me, it's not good enough, right? I think that you can get the business, maybe sort of one pip, i.e. initial transaction. But I want more. I want more knowledge on how to trade crypto from a platform provider. So when I go in, I can maybe check out how to scale up my knowledge and also scale up my investments. And this, again, comes to communication. So are you guys also looking at that type of communication when you onboard new players into your platform?
100%. I mean, the reason we started this company is when I first got into crypto myself, after having worked 30 years on Wall Street, having sold derivatives to central banks.
Yeah.
And when I first got into it, I had no idea what the heck I was doing. And that was an immediate red flag. And I knew right then and there, if somebody with my background didn't understand what the heck I was doing, how is everybody else in the world supposed to figure this stuff out? And when you look at the research reports, you realize, well, they haven't and they aren't. And there's only 200 odd million out of 8 billion even involved. So it's very, very low adopted rate right now. Our model is exactly what you're talking about. Help, education, know-how, not investment advice. What is the difference between cold storage and hot wallets? Things like this. Because to your point, either people don't have the time or attention span to go watch videos or whatever, or even they watch a video and they're like, huh, what? And then they go to the exchange. It's like, wait, that's not what they were saying. And it's too difficult.
Yeah.
So why not either jump online and chat with one of our agents or email with one of our agents or pick up the phone and call, whatever your method of communication is, and they will help walk you through whatever your issue is. And that's key and critical.
I like it. And I mean, I guess as we wrap up this part of the podcast, and we get to the flash round, which is a bit of fun, by the way. What is the one bit of advice that you would give to, that guy at Goldman right now that is maybe listening to this podcast, or the guy at PwC or girl at Deloitte, and want to break free and head out into the entrepreneurial journey? What would you say to them right now?
As the great Phil Knight at Nike said, just do it, in all caps. Now, there's one caveat to that. You have to do copious amounts of due diligence. So whatever endeavor you want to go down, you dot your I's, You cross your T's, you do as much due diligence as you can. But ultimately, in life, you have to take that chance. You have to take that opportunity.
Yeah.
And don't let these chains, as I was mentioning earlier, from the Eagles, hold you back, hold you down, be your excuse of why you can't do something. And again, everybody that's listening to this, they are well within the intellect range to be able to pull off anything, but you don't just full-heartedly jump into something without doing a tremendous amount of research, speak to as many people in and around the space as you can, and then just do it. Just do it.
Love it. You say really, really great advice there. And I am all in. I'm going to do it as well. I'm up for it. Okay, so now we go to the flash round. A bit of drum rolls. Flash round is a bit of fun at the end of the podcast, as all our listeners know, where we get to know our guests. And actually, you also get to know me, because I ask three quick questions. They're sort of yes or no answers. And then I give the mic to our illustrious guest. And he is allowed to ask one question.
I'm allowed to ask one question.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's allowed to ask one question. George's allowed to ask one question. It's the power of being the host.
I understand.
You make the rules, right? It's a bit of fun at the end. So here it is, three questions. First one, what's a better role for you, a corporate role or a startup role?
I've told everyone my whole life I've had this entrepreneur trapped in my body the whole time. I'm going startup.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. What is more important, brand or product?
I'll say product, because without the product, you don't have a brand, do you?
Yeah, brilliant. Love it, love it, love it, love it. All answers are good answers. And what is better right now? Okay, well, maybe what would you do? Invest in crypto or the normal fiat equities, etc.? I know this is not investing advice, by the way.
Yes, not investment advice. I would absolutely, again, everything's predicated on your time horizon, risk tolerance, all these different things. Crypto, absolutely crypto. Again, be smart with it. I like the blue chips for right now. The dust will settle on a lot of the other tokens. There's some great other projects out there. I think if you buy it with a long-term horizon, you should be pretty good.
Cool. Okay. My friend, I'm going to hand the mic over to you via the pond, the Atlantic. And
I'm going to give you an open net kick on this question. Okay, here's my question to you. My question to you is: who is your favorite tennis player of all time?
Oh man, my son asks me this every day. He asks me this every day. He comes up to me, Dad, do you like Roger Federer or Rafa Nadal? I'm like, oh man, this is like the same question you asked me yesterday.
But this is the all-time.
This is all-time. Good question. You know, I'm a tennis fan. So all-time, it's the one and only. I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And unfortunately, I had the pleasure of falling asleep during many of the Wimbledon encounters against Becker and Edberg. So I'm going to put those into the rubbish bin, and I'm going to bring out Rafa. Rafa's my all-time. Just watching these guys over the last few years has been absolutely amazing. And actually, we got some tickets for the French Open this year, so looking forward to seeing
them again. I'm envious of that. And very envious.
Yeah, I'll tell you later how many I got as well. But listen, brilliant having you on the show today. If anyone wants to catch up with you and connect with you, what is the best? How can they do that?
They can go to LinkedIn and find me there, George Kushner, Kushner. And I will be more than happy and receptive to accept your invite or any type of communique. And we would love to see people. If I can do one quick plug, sign up at h2crypto.io, please.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. Please do. And it's a great company, a great leadership team, and really looking forward to watching you guys grow in the next few months, the next few years. And brilliant to have you on the show today. I know we touched on a subject, hopefully that brought out a lot of things that people can actually use and go forward with. And great to share the mic with you today.
Richard, this was awesome. Thank you so much. Thoroughly enjoyed the time.
Brilliant.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.